Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. At last night's vice presidential debate, J.D. Vance refused to say Donald Trump lost the 2020 election.
And it manifested itself because of Donald Trump's inability to say. He is still saying he didn't lose the election. I would just ask that. Did he lose the 2020 election?
Tim, I'm focused on the future. Did Kamala Harris censor Americans from speaking their mind in the wake of the 2020 COVID situation?
That is a damning non-answer.
Last month on the All In podcast, J.D. Vance was asked what he would have done in 2020.
He was asked to not certify it.
Sure.
So would you have certified the last year for the third?
Again, I would have asked the states to submit alternative slates of electors and let the country have the debate about what actually matters and what kind of an election that we had.
You wouldn't have certified, states. To be clear.
I would have asked the states to submit alternative slates of electors.
I think that's
what I would have done. Again, I've said that publicly many times. But
last night's moderator, CBS anchor Nora O'Donnell, said asking states to submit alternative electors has been called unconstitutional and illegal. During the debate, J.D. Vance would not say whether he would certify next month's election results.
Would you again seek to challenge this year's election results, even if every governor certifies the results? I'll give you 2 minutes.
Well, Nora, first of all, I think that we're focused on the future.
J.D. Vance also lied about supporting a national abortion ban, tried to sanitize his party's extreme anti-abortion record, and blamed many of the country's problems on immigrants. Tim Walz had a pretty rocky start. He was very tame compared to his fiery presence on TV shows before Kamala Harris chose him to be her running mate, and he only brought up Project 2025 once. So what did you think of the tone of last night's debate? What do you think of the media coverage of what we saw last night and many of the lies that we heard from J.D. Vance? As we said yesterday, CBS said that they were not going to fact check the candidates in real time. That would be up to them. So what do you think about how that went? You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. Today we're joined by David Perry, a journalist and associate director of undergraduate studies in history at the University of Minnesota. He has written about Tim Walz. Hi, David. Thanks so much for joining us again.
Such a pleasure.
Great to have you. Chris Lehman is the DC Bureau Chief for The Nation and a contributing editor at The Baffler. Hi, Chris. Thank you for joining us again.
Hi, Rose. Thanks for having me again. A pleasure.
Well, great to have you. Before I ask you both a general question about the debate, I want to spend a little bit of time talking about J.D. Vance refusing to say whether Donald Trump lost the 2020 election. The New Yorker's Susan Glasser tweeted last night, "So more than an hour in, nobody's mentioned Mike Pence or January 6th, and the reason J.D. Vance is on stage, because he agreed with Trump's lies about the 2020 election." And I think this is so important because election officials are preparing for possible violence. Here's a headline from the AP last month. Election officials prepare for the threats with panic buttons and bulletproof glass. They're talking about what's happening in Cobb County, Atlanta. And then the conversation. This is Alexander Cohen, assistant professor of political science at Clarkson University. Post-election violence is possible in the United States, and it could be worse than January 6th. I mean, we can just go on and on. Newsweek, the FBI is warning of election-related violence as it beefs up safety measures. So it was too bad, really, that this didn't get more attention last night, David, and that it did come up, but it came up toward the end of the debate. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that should have been the first question, that there's just nothing for a vice presidential debate, right, where the vice president's, despite how many times Vance said the Harris administration, right, what does the vice president actually do? What are their actual roles? This is the thing. This is it. This, we've seen it. We saw it in an unprecedented way in 2020. And it was a good closing question. I do think that as time goes on and we leave the immediacy of the debate, that is what we're going to talk about. At least that is what I'm hearing. That is what I'm thinking about. But I sure feel like it should have been the first 30 seconds of the debate. It's where I thought the moderators did a pretty good job given the rules and the context, but That was it. That was what they needed to talk about from the start.
And also, just to add one more piece, which is really important, again, from CNN, September 30th, 12 election lies Trump is using to set the stage to dispute a potential 2024 defeat. Trump has escalated his long-running assault on the integrity of the election as the campaign enters its final stretch, using a new series of lies about ballots, vote counting, and the election process to lay the groundwork to challenge a potential defeat in November. So what are your thoughts on this, Chris?
Yeah, well, I share David's view very strongly and probably unsurprisingly. But I think the other thing to note, regardless of where the question came in the debate, the place of election denialism and the false mythology that the GOP has erected around January 6th is now a litmus test in the Republican Party. And it is true that, you know, the reason Mike Pence was not the nominee and the reason J.D. Vance is largely because Pence, you know, crossed his boss on the key question of forcing, you know, the shutdown of the certification process on January 6th. So yeah, I in a perfect world, I think the debate moderators should have opened with a question of J.D. Vance, basically saying, why are you here tonight as opposed to Mike Pence? What's the deal? I do think that, you know, Waltz, who also, yes, I agree, started off quite shaky and is not known as a good debater, you know, did ask the essential question to Vance about, you know, do you believe that Donald Trump lost in 2022? And Vance just stammered his dumb talking point about we're focused on the future. Look, like the question of whether you certify the election in 4 months is about the future. You know, that's what I was yelling at my TV screen, and that's why I'm kind of yelling now. It's such a nakedly content-free and diversionary tactic. And I think, you know, I know the Democrats have already cut an ad on that exchange, and I think that maybe the most lasting legacy of the VP debate, which, you know, again, historically does very little to shape the dynamics in presidential elections.
And this is so important because so much is at stake. I mean, here's a headline from Axios. And so this is getting media attention. But I think we're in such a different media world. And I've met people who get their news from YouTube now. And I think what's important about these debates, even though people say the vice presidential debate is maybe not that important, you're getting people who might get their news from a podcaster watching these debates. And so this is a time to really bring out facts about what we're facing. Axios had a piece last month called "The U.S. Braces for Perfect Storm of Election Chaos." And I just think we should spend some time on this because people who work in election offices and volunteer, they've received death threats. And we don't know what we're going to face come election day and the days after. But based on some of the guests we've had on and the reporting that's out there, there's a possibility of violence because of the lies that Trump is peddling. And so that's why I think, David, it's really important to just spend a few more minutes on this, just to talk about what we're really dealing with right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is where Walls was strong. We really haven't faced something quite like this. We have certainly in the context of the mid-19th century. I'm a historian. There's the great work by Joanne Freeman, a professor at Yale, on this. There's a lot of this kind of analogous violence, but in the context of the Civil War, and that was quite some time ago, right? In modern American history, we face nothing like this in terms of the fundamental question of what is going to happen with this election, and when there is, you know, if the result is at all in question, will our democracy find its resilience? And I wish I could, I would love to be able to sort of speak encouragingly about what I think will happen, but I don't know. And it is something I am definitely watching and thinking about as a journalist and historian. I'm losing sleep about it as a voter and an American, as a citizen. It is an unprecedented moment, and I think that there will certainly be attempts at violent disruption in many places around the country. And then we're going to have to be resilient. And then our media is going to have to talk about the truth. And that has not been a hallmark of broad coverage of this moment, where, you know, there is going to be a truth and a falsehood. And just saying one side says A and one side says B is not going to it's not going to build resiliency in our democracy.
And to quote Susan Glasser again from The New Yorker, she tweeted last night, "The conceit of this CBS debate is that this is just a normal policy election. Two guys shooting the SHIT about housing starts and healthcare financing misses the moment pretty dramatically." Chris, what would you like to add?
Yeah, I think that analysis is true. And I think, you know, what was strong about Vance's performance is he, you know, unlike Walz, he is kind of a debate guy. He went to Yale Law School. He is very polished and practiced in sort of the rhetoric of debate. And in that, in sort of both sides environment that Susan Glasser was describing, he comes off as like a just asking questions podcast bro, right? Who's, you know, saying things, oh, like, let's have this healthy debate. That's what he was saying ludicrously in response to the January 6th question, was that, you know, the real threat to democracy is the government censorship that Kamala Harris allegedly presided over in suppressing Facebook posts that were critical of the COVID response. And, you know, one good line from Walz said, didn't really get widely reported, was like, he said, "I'm not the owner of Facebook. The government isn't the owner of Facebook." You know, this was another just transparent whataboutist ploy. But it, you know, because of, you know, Vance presents himself as a much more sane, traditional political voice than someone like Donald Trump, who, you know, we know from the last debate, just started yelling about petting when he got challenged and disoriented. So, yeah, he exploited the weaknesses of the debate format, and especially, you know, the failure of, you know, the policy failure of CBS News to not fact check in real time. At one point, Vance even, you know, protested in a, you know, kind of funny, pathetic moment of like, he said, you know, "You guys, the rules are that you aren't supposed to fact check me," which again speaks volumes about the failure of broadcast journalism in covering this crisis of democracy. You know, and I think I said this the last time I was on your show, but the whole immigration demagoguery on the right is also a massive failure of journalism, because journalists aren't reporting the basic facts about immigration, which are, you know, that immigrants do not commit violent crime at a higher rate than the native population. In fact, it's significantly lower. They do not force up housing costs, despite what J.D. Vance said fallaciously in the debate last night. They actually are massive contributors to the American economy. They are not a threat to Social Security and Medicare, as Donald Trump always lies about. So yeah, there's a big, you know, there's the small bore fact-checking failure on, you know, what is said in the debate in real time, but there's also the massive failure of the media to just report the truth about, you know, an issue that the right has demagogued into the center of political debate.
And to that point, when you think about J.D. Vance, so if Trump wins, J.D. Vance is one step away from the White House. If he doesn't win, J.D. Vance is a senator from Ohio who's 40 years old and will most likely run for president in 4 years, and is possibly, and is, you know, the future of the Republican Party. Right. And so what about the media covering J.D. Vance and his brand of Republicanism? So The Guardian has a piece called "More Trump Than Trump, J.D. Vance Becomes Effective MAGA Messenger." HuffPost, J.D. Vance is an anchor for Donald Trump and the new right. What are your thoughts about that question, David, and how the media are or are not covering that?
Yeah, I mean, I think J.D. Vance is very good on television and in debates and is really bad at talking to people. So far, we haven't seen someone who can do Trumpism at scale the way that Trump can. And I think that Trump is a historically terrible figure, but he is very good at talking to 10,000 people. Even when they get kind of bored and restless, he can create these spectacles. It's the thing that he can do. And Vance is not good at that. I was thinking about that Facebook part where he's talking about censorship. It is true that there is a small slice of the very online right that is very concerned about Facebook censorship, but it is not an issue that I feel is compelling. It is not a response that – it's a response that fills the space, which is what debaters are good at. But I doesn't mean that he won't be successful Republican candidate on a national scale. I don't want to just dismiss him as a threat, but I actually think his political skills at the things that presidential candidates do to generate nationwide mass movements across this country, he has not demonstrated those skills at this time.
Well, we have a few emails coming in. Jonathan writes, what has been overlooked in all the debates around January 6 is not the fact that Donald Trump incited the riot. I think the argument that he did not intend for it to go violent is at least partly plausible. What drives me crazy is that neither Biden nor Harris nor Vance brought up the incontrovertible fact that he sat and watched television for 3 hours waiting to see how the insurrection turned out. Well, thank you for that comment, Jonathan. And then Art writes, in regard to the lack of fact-checking last night, ABC did a much better job on that in their presidential debate. In regard to Waltz's performance, he was ill at ease, visibly rushed, made verbal errors, and too many times agreed with what Vance was saying. However, Vance was very devious and misleading in his answers to several of the moderators' questions, and the moderators did not control Vance when he interrupted and spoke out of turn. They finally cut off his mic. Overall, both performances by the candidates as well as the moderators were somewhat disappointing. I wonder, David, what your thoughts are, because you've covered Tim Walz. He seemed like a completely different person. I thought, where is this fiery Tim Walz that we saw in all of these TV interviews before he was chosen to be Kamala Harris's running mate? Do you think the campaign told him to tone it down and not talk about his progressive policies?
I hope so, in the sense that I agree that it was very disappointing, right? I've been on your program and in my writing talking about how impressed I am with Tim Walz, what a great leader he's been in Minnesota, and how great he was on television in the run-up to being selected as vice president. And I just didn't see that yesterday. And I console myself by remembering I was very upset about the Tim Kaine, Mike Pence debate in 2016, which was not, I think, a big impact. I didn't really think that Harris and Pence in 2020 was, again, there's this tendency of the vice presidential debates to be labeled as a civil discussion. I feel like it happened with Biden and Ryan in 2012, though I didn't go back and look at those. But this was not the Tim Walz that really impressed me and won over the nation in the middle of the summer. I hope it was a strategy, and I hope that they were right in their strategy. Because if it wasn't, then it was a blunder. It was, and I feel like it was a wasted opportunity for Walz to say, "You went to Yale, I went to Mankato. You sell products to rich people. I teach fourth grader social studies," and to speak to the kind part of America that Vance is from those communities, I guess, and pretends to speak for them, but does not. And I feel Walz really does. And there were a few moments in the debate, but it was disappointing. It improved towards the end. It improved when they talked about things that Walz has more strength on. But it was not the guy we saw on MSNBC in those first couple days after Harris was was clearly going to be the nominee. We didn't hear Walz talk about these weird creeps, but Vance is the weird creep in chief. Vance is the one who wants to monitor pregnancies. Vance is the one, you know, monitor menstrual cycles. We just had this really intense story in the Washington Post about Florida Republicans trying to find out what a teenager looked like naked to see whether they were trans or not.
What?
Like, this is the Vance. I mean, it's the kind of thing we've been talking about that is happening. But here is a, you know, specific story about Republican administrations and police officers trying to really police, you know, what is in children's underwear as a way of control, you know, persecuting trans people. Vance is part of that agenda, and it's weird and it's creepy. And I wanted Walz to say that, and that discourse was gone. And I hope that the Harris campaign was right in that strategy.
Wow, you're talking about this piece, her trans daughter made the volleyball team, then an armed officer showed up?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's quite appalling.
I mean, that is the Republican, you know, anti-trans agenda, how it's going to look. And I just feel that most Americans don't want police officers asking what your kids look like naked. I believe that the vast majority of Americans don't want that. And so, but also don't really believe that Republicans are going to do it. So that these big national television moments have potential to change what Americans understand. And I don't think that happened.
Wow. Okay, we're going to have to read this story and have this reporter on. Chris, what are your thoughts about what we saw from Tim Walz last night? I'm just wondering if someone might leak something from the campaign about what went on in the preparation, because he was just a different man, a different politician for the most part.
Yeah, as I said, you know, he said during his candidate interviews with Harris that he is not a strong debater. And I think, you know, he tends to... you know, the things that are strengths at rallies and in these, you know, TV interviews are that he sort of builds to a crescendo verbally as he, you know, goes from point to point. And I think it took him a while on the debate stage to find that rhythm. And I think he was, you know, nervous. And but I, you know, I tend to think, as David suggested, that this probably was a strategy on the part of the Harris campaign to make him seem like a, you know, conventional policy-driven political leader. But I also share David's frustration. I also felt it was a huge missed opportunity when they were, you know, when Vance was doling out this disingenuous argument about how Republicans need to earn the trust of voters on reproductive rights again by, you know, instituting better, you know, pro-family policies and a sort of broad focus. And, you know, Vance ducked out of both Senate votes to expand the child tax credit. Like, that's a very material, you know, it's the exact opposite of what he claimed Republicans need to do. And that was another moment when I was kind of yelling at Walz on my TV to, you know, raise that crucial point, because, you know, it just exposes this rhetoric as hollow, opportunistic pandering that has no content. So yeah, it's frustrating, but I also share David's general view that the VP debates, you know, are there largely to create a symbolic kind of image around each candidate that they can assume the presidency. I think the most memorable, the most memorable thing of recent VP debates was when the fly was buzzing around Mike Pence in the 2016 year. I certainly remember that more than anything Tim Kaine said. So I think, you know, there is a tendency to blow these moments out of proportion. I do think the January 6th moment, even though it came late and, you know, should have been much more the focus, I think, as you were saying, Rose, you know, we have this sort of disjointed media sphere where people are going to encounter debate moments on YouTube or on social media. And that January 6th exchange was really telling. And I think that is the moment that we'll live on. I think it's also worth noting that Walz was really good on reproductive rights. Like, he told very compelling stories about, you know, real people who have been harmed and in some cases killed by the draconian aftermath of the Dobbs decision. He was also really good on healthcare, which were both subjects that J.D. Vance just lied, you know, in this, you know, again, very slick but empty way about. So, you know, I think both David and I would probably give Walz a gentleman's C, but I think, but I think, you know, it was a C, perhaps heading toward a B minus for me.
We have an email from Ted who says, if Kamala Harris loses, we can blame this advisor preaching dialed back messaging, which really showed in Walz's debate performance. Jeff Guerin is his name. And Ted provided a piece from CNN that says 3 weeks into her presidential run was the first time the Biden campaign's pollsters, now hers, held a deep dive call with Kamala Harris's inner circle to discuss what she's been saying on the stump. Over the line came a lot of praise, but also some suggested tweaks. First, said veteran Democratic numbers man Jeff Guerin, summarizing their analysis, stop saying we're not going back. It wasn't focused enough on the future, he argued. Second, lay off all the weird talk. It's too negative. So that's also interesting because Walz is known for really shifting the whole discussion around the election, saying that these guys are weird, you know, coming into your exam room is weird. Nobody wants that. But last night, J.D. Vance called climate science weird. So thanks for that. Go ahead. Is that Chris?
Oh, no, no. I was just going to say it's important to note later on in the CNN piece, Kamala Harris reportedly rejected that advice. Mm. So, I mean, the pollsters, it is true. I think the campaign is in a kind of more of a bunker mentality now and is being less aggressive on some of these fronts. But, you know, they are still saying we won't go back, and they are at least on at rallies or they're using the sort of weird critique.
Yeah. And one quick question before we go to break on that, J.D. Vance is all over the place. He's on the Sunday shows regularly, constantly giving interviews. Right. I can't remember the last time I saw Tim Walz give an TV interview after he was chosen to be VP. What's going on with that?
It is a weird thing, especially because, as we've been saying, his TV interviews were his real strength. I don't get that piece. I mean, I suppose, you know, maybe the Harris strategists are saying, like, let Vance talk because he's so, you know, crazy and bad that voters will be turned off by him. But I still think, you know, the traditional role of the vice presidential candidate is to be the attack dog for the person at the top of the ticket. And it seemed like Walz was, you know, pretty much an ideal candidate for that role. And I'm as baffled as you are by his shrinking TV footprint.
Well, we're going to take a quick break. Chris Lehman is D.C. Bureau Chief for The Nation and contributing editor at The Baffler. David Perry is a journalist and associate director of undergraduate studies in history at the University of Minnesota. What did you think of last night's vice presidential debate? What stood out for you? You can give us a call, 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. I'm Rose Aguilar. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, Jessica Valenti will discuss her new book, Abortion, Our Bodies, Their Lies, and the Truths We Use to Win. She says J.D. Vance tried to sugarcoat his misogyny and the Republican Party's extreme abortion bans at last night's debate. I'm glad that Chris Lehman brought up one of J.D. Vance's votes, because it's easy to forget that J.D. Vance is a senator from Ohio. I mean, he's brand new, but he does have a voting record, and it's just not getting much attention. So Susan B. Anthony Pro-Life America, the group that supports extreme abortion bans, has given J.D. Vance an A-plus rating. He does have a record. So we're going to talk about that with Jessica Valenti tomorrow. And then later in today's show, he's got a record on guns. He's got a record on climate. And I just don't know why it's not getting more attention. If you'd like to join us about last night's debate and really media coverage of the election overall, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. Today, we're joined by Chris Lehman, D.C. Bureau Chief for The Nation and contributing editor at The Baffler. David Perry is a journalist and associate director of undergraduate studies in history at the University of Minnesota. Let's hear from Lawrence in Berkeley. Hi, Lawrence. Welcome to the show.
Oh, hi. What I wanted to talk about was Walz's response to climate change and to Hurricane Helene, which was really about the most pathetic thing that happened all night. They brought up Helene, and Vance, of course, is trying to eliminate all the extreme Republican positions and saying, well, we have to have clean air and clean water. And this was a great opportunity for Walz to say, you know, Hurricane Helene is just the beginning and it's going to get worse, because the reason we have so much rain is that when the air is hotter, more water evaporates from the ocean and the air holds more water, so therefore there's going to be more rain because there's so much more water in the air. And we're going to have to stop putting carbon dioxide and methane in the air very soon and very quickly, or it's just going to get a lot worse. You know, we've had 160 people die now and a lot missing, but it's going to get a lot worse than that. And this is a great opportunity that was wasted. He didn't say anything to correct Vance saying, oh, well, we need clean air and clean water.
I agree with you. I was surprised by that too, Lawrence. And obviously, we're very happy, finally, that the climate crisis was brought up at a debate. I believe it was question two, which has never happened before. And just to give a little bit of context here, the latest number from CNN, the death toll is now at least 180, and it's expected to rise, sadly. Michael Wenner with the Berkeley Lab, he's a senior scientist there, he tweeted, our best estimate is that climate change caused over 50% more rainfall during Hurricane Helene in some parts of Georgia and the Carolinas. We estimate that the observed rainfall was made up to 20 times more likely in these areas because of global warming. So those are the facts. So let's hear, and I wanted to play the whole exchange, but it's just too long. So what we're going to do first is hear from J.D. Vance on climate change, and then I'll read a bit about Tim Walz's response.
And Nora, you asked about climate change. I think this is a very important issue. Look, a lot of people are justifiably worried about all these crazy weather patterns. I think it's important for us, first of all, to say Donald Trump and I support clean air, clean water. We want the environment to be cleaner and safer. But one of the things that I've noticed some of our Democratic friends talking a lot about is a concern about carbon emissions, this idea that carbon emissions drives all of the climate change. Well, let's just say that's true, just for the sake of argument, so we're not arguing about weird science. Let's just say that's true. Well, if you believe that, what would you want to do? The answer is that you'd want to reshore as much American manufacturing as possible, and you'd want to produce as much energy as possible in the United States of America, because we're the cleanest economy in the entire world.
So there's a couple things there. Again, Vance used the word, if you believe in climate change. So many of our guests are scientists say, we don't care what you believe. The fact is, the science is clear. And so there's that. And then Walz's response, like Lawrence said, he did say that Donald Trump has called the climate, quote, problem a hoax, and then joked that these things would make more beachfront property to be able to invest in. But overall, David, I thought Walz's response to this was pretty weak, given what we now know and given what we just saw in the Carolinas and then really just across the country over the last couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, it was early in the debate when he was weaker, right? He was not, he did improve, as Chris was saying, later in the debate. It was refreshing to see a climate change question up front, just like it was refreshing to see a clear question about abortion. I can't remember how many debates over the years I've been tweeting or posting, ask about abortion, and then and then not having that happen, or not having that happen early or clearly. But yeah, it was not, especially given, I mean, he keeps saying he talked about Minnesota, but not really with the kind of specifics in terms of what Minnesota's doing to try to decarbonize, to invest in, to invest in green energy. He talked about the green energy investments from the Biden-Harris administration, but not, I thought, in a way that maybe made the stakes clear. I liked it when he attacked Trump. I felt that trying to deal with Vance's weird, we fight climate change through tariffs, that again is one of these sort of internet arguments that the right wing likes to propagate, but I don't think most people are really persuaded by that. We can see the weather's bad. And what I did like is but he kind of stumbled through it. He talked about the farmers in Minnesota who have, as I can tell you, have been through a spring of unprecedented floods. And right now we just finished the hottest September and dry, one of the driest Septembers, but certainly the hottest September in Minnesota history. Mm-hmm. Those kinds of things, when if you read the transcript, that's in there. But if you were just listening, it didn't communicate. And the job of the TV debate is to communicate. And I just don't think it happened.
That's a good point. We should also mention that when J.D. Vance is asked, what is the first thing you and Trump will do in office? He says, drill, baby, drill. And again, yeah. I just wish this got more attention. I mean, it's getting some attention, but I'm talking broadcast. Rolling Stone had a piece how J.D. Vance went from green tech investor to climate change doubter. Trump's VP pick flip-flopped on global warming as he rose in GOP politics, earning a zero score on climate from a leading environmental group. And then here's Politico. Vance changed his tune on climate. The oil cash flowed. Vance has championed fracking and railed against clean energy since joining the Senate in 2023 after a campaign partly bankrolled by fossil fuel companies. Now the Ohio Republican is a vice presidential candidate, joining Trump in his calls to drill, baby, drill. So, Chris, what are your thoughts on this topic of the climate crisis, given what's at stake here?
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously, as David was saying, Vance's response to that question was a typical, again, whataboutist podcaster kind of move that sounds rhetorically kind of clever. And I do think it was also to Waltz's credit, it did take him too long to get there, but he also pointed out that Donald Trump had, in fact, hosted a whole bevy of oil company executives trying to raise $1 billion with a B dollars from them, and he said in exchange, basically, I will do whatever you want. So, you know, all of this kind of cleverness around reshoring American manufacturing and energy production is again just another empty opportunistic feint. The other thing, and, I don't want your listeners to think I was yelling at my TV all night, but I was yelling at that point, when Vance did his song and dance about America has the cleanest environment of any major economy. The Supreme Court has systematically dismantled the ability of the EPA in one decision and the ability of the federal government writ large in another decision to regulate exactly these matters. And it was really strange to me that I don't think the Supreme Court came up once during the entire debate, even though they obviously created the crisis in reproductive rights and abortion access. And, sadly, I don't think the Democrats have any plan that I'm aware of to seriously reform a renegade, corrupt, and reactionary Supreme Court. So, it's another missed opportunity. And I think, as your caller said, Waltz didn't do the, when Vance had that stupid weird science line, like, it is not weird, it is science, dude. Like, it doesn't take much to sort of, we're experiencing extreme weather here when we're allegedly this super clean, environment, but it's all over the world. So it's an easily refutable point, and you know, it's just regrettable that it occurred at the time in the debate when Waltz was kind of spinning his wheels. So
right, and given that we have to take drastic action by the year 2030. This election is so important. The environmentalist Bill McKibben had a piece in The Guardian last month saying that if Trump wins the election, it will doom our efforts to tackle the climate crisis. He actually says the results of the vote in November could reverberate for a million years because so much is at stake. So it's just too bad that that really didn't come out at the debate last night. Let's hear from another caller. Let's go to David in San Francisco. Hi, David. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Rose. It fascinates me. Does anybody remember who Edward R. Murrow was?
Yes. CBS?
I mean, this debate was on CBS.
Right.
Edward
right.
R. Murrow took on Joseph McCarthy. Donald Trump is directly related to Joseph McCarthy. Donald Trump is a cleaned up
kind,
Joseph McCarthy. He's an opportunist and a liar, basically. Joe McCarthy was not the kind of man who could have run for president because he was an alcoholic, a drunk, and he wasn't exactly clean for the election television and all that kind of stuff. But basically what happened, Nixon accepted the results of 1960. He might have disputed them. There's some reason he might have. Okay. Now, Al Gore clearly won the election in 2000. And the Republicans fought back. What the Republicans do is they simply fought back. They're like a dog who doesn't let go of the bone. They fought back relentlessly. The Democrats wimp out. They don't do anything. I grew up with people who fought. John F. Kennedy, Lyndon Baines Johnson. I don't recognize that DNA. And that's the reason we've got the things we've got, the safety net. I mean, when are people going to wake up to the fact that politeness does not gain you anything? This is not a prep school. J.D. Vance has cleaned up his act. He says a lot of nasty things. Of course, he's not going to say them on television because it wouldn't be seemly.
Right.
You know, he very carefully didn't say anything that would offend Donald Trump. Oh no, of course he can't talk about the 2020 election because Trump would go nuts. Everybody knows that's what makes Trump crazy. This is the kind of stuff that's elementary. You or I could have gotten up there and given a better response. And I'm sorry, Waltz was picked because he didn't dominate Harris. Kelly should have been the guy. Kelly had the credentials to go after somebody. You know, that's what the vice presidential candidate traditionally is, an attack dog.
Well,
where's the attack dog?
Thank you for the comment. It's interesting timing that you just called and gave us this opinion, because we have another one from Nick, and I'd love to get our guest to respond. Nick writes, I disagree with all of the belly aching around last night's debate. The objective was to win as many undecided voters as possible, not decided Democrats. Insults and the attack dog approach would not have worked, especially when you're the Minnesota nice guy. Most on this call wanted Walls to drag Vance around the stage the way Kamala did Donald. Walls needed to win undecideds, and that required a different approach. So what do you both think? David, your thoughts first?
I mean, when I say that I hope the Harris strategy is right, that's what I hope that's right. You know, I am skeptical about the undecided voter as a significant phenomenon. I believe there are, or rather, you know, people weigh in candidates. I think there are lots of people who are trying to decide whether to vote. People who are busy, who are working jobs. It's ridiculous that we don't have a holiday for Election Day, but, you know, the reality is that it's just going to be a Tuesday. And, you know, who do we get out to vote? And what motivates them? I don't know the answers to that. And I know there are a lot of people who study it very deeply. I hope that the Harris decision that this kind of presentation is a better way to motivate voters who might not otherwise vote is correct. I don't know. I do think there are opportunities when someone lies to state the truth in clear, understandable ways. And that is something that, that isn't about dragging Vance around the stage, but is just about saying there are things that are true and there are things that are not. And we saw a little bit of that yesterday, but I just think there are a lot more opportunities.
Your thoughts, Chris?
Well, to your last listener's email, I'm just now looking at it's a CNN poll. I don't know, you know, what the crosstabs or anything like that is. But amongst people describing themselves as Republican-leaning voters who watched the debate, Walz went from 8% favorable to 24% favorable, which could, and I share David's skepticism about the undecided voter. I think we are now in an age of negative polarization where people who even say they're undecided may have made up their minds and are not forthcoming about that choice. But I do think, I think what has to happen between now and Election Day is the Democrats, they need a turnout, sort of avalanche. So the challenge there is you kind of have to do everything at once. You do have to truce squad the lies from the Trump ticket, especially as they concern existential issues like climate change and the future of our democracy. And you have to, there is, according to some polling, a significant slice of the electorate that worries that Harris is too far on the extreme left, which is crazy to me, but it's an attitude out there that I know, consultants are reckoning with. It's true that I am impatient, having lived through decades now of what your previous caller called kind of a listless, fetal defensiveness in the Democratic camp. I don't have an easy answer here either, except that I do think one key thing, pundits, I live in Washington among professional political journalists, and you're already seeing these kind of initial hosannas. The Washington Post editorial today said this was a debate of civility and substance. And that plays well to those, to that class of people. But I think actually the things that we're dinging Tim Walz for being a little flustered, for misspeaking at times, but, saying things like, when he said that his son had witnessed a shooting, mm-hmm. That was a very powerful moment and sadly a very relatable moment. And I think, a lot of Walz's self-presentation comes off to pundits as, unpolished and not, the Yale Law School credentialed kind you get from J.D. Vance, but actually does communicate to Americans in a much more direct way. I was struck, again, CNN had a focus group, which I'm not crazy about in general, but there was an undecided voter from Michigan who said he decided to side with Harris and Walz after the exchange about January 6th because he didn't want to entrust his vote to someone who would not respect it. And I think that's a powerful takeaway from that moment.
Line, is someone who's going to honor America or someone who's going to honor our democracy or someone who's going to honor Donald Trump. I thought that was an amazing line. It delivered perfectly, incredibly powerful. It was a culminating moment in the debate. And I just didn't want to forget to say that because to Chris's point there, I just thought, I don't know if he came up with that on the spot or someone pre-wrote it or something, but it is a good line and it is true, right?
The Harris campaign has already cut an ad.
I'm sure they have.
I
decided I was going to not just watch ads obsessively this morning, so I'm glad you did. Thank you for your service, Chris.
Well, it is literally my job.
I want to ask you both in our remaining minutes, because we're down to the wire and many are still trying to normalize these candidates, and I just wonder, what do you think is at stake in this election? It's a big question, but I keep asking every single guest this question because it's so important. We've got about a minute left each. David, what do you think is at stake in this election?
I do think the big picture about democracy and about climate, these things really, really, really are very significant. But I want to come back to one of the things I said the first time I was on the air with you. I just look at my family. I have a disabled child. I have a trans child, right? They are my future. They are my hopes for the future. I know it's cliched, but right now for both of them, what their relationship is with society and with the government and with power is really directly at stake. Written in the details, the fine print of Project 2025, in ways that are very scary. And I would like to not have that threat hanging over us in 4 weeks.
Chris, what about you? What's at stake?
Well, I also have the advantage of I think I answered this same question from you earlier this month. It's on the show, and it is like David was saying. My response is also kind of the cliched one of our democracy really is on the ballot. I wish it weren't. You know, yeah. I wish we were debating issues in a way that did not have this sort of sword of Damocles hanging over the whole process. But you know, Project 2025 is, you know, a very detailed and, you know, despite everything Trump claims, it is at the center of the policy planning for a second Trump administration. And it is, you know, a blueprint for the authoritarian takeover of our government and civil society. It's going to, you know, get rid of the professional civil service and, you know, honeycomb the government with party hacks who believe what J.D. Vance and Donald Trump believes, and they're going to admit, you know, they're going to seize the controls of the administrative state and do, you know, they will monitor menstrual cycles and reproductive plans of citizens, and they will go after trans Americans, and they will, you know, consolidate power in a way that should be terrifying, you know, beyond, you know, sort of partisan political commitments to anyone who cares about the future of what remains of American democracy. So that is, in my view, what's at stake.
Chris Lehman is DC Bureau Chief for The Nation and a contributing editor at The Baffler. David Perry is a journalist and Associate Director of Undergraduate Studies in History at the University of Minnesota. Chris and David, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Chris.
Thanks for having me. Yep.
Thank you. And I hope you can join us tomorrow. We'll be speaking with Jessica Valenti about her new book called Abortion, and we will continue the discussion about last night's debate. Thanks to Savannah Harriman-Pote for producing today's show. Thanks to Kevin Vance for engineering our show. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.